Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Malta Historical Society. This talk is delivered by Mr. Lawrence Pavia.
In this presentation, brief presentation, I hope to be able to introduce to you and give you an overview of Julian Trevelyan and Mary Fedden's work in relation to to Malta, particularly starting from their first trip to Malta in 1958. As Judge Bonello said, Julian and Mary Fedden were great artists. And I say this because we've had a lot of artists in Malta who depicted Malta's landscape, but who were at times mediocre. I feel that their art was truly art of accomplished artists. Julian had studied at Cambridge, moved on to Paris, where he met the modernists, Miró, Calder, Picasso, Braque, but he was specializing mainly in printmaking under Hayter. That was his main interest at that particular point. He returned to Britain, to London, in 1936, joined the Surrealist movement, was very active in that movement, both politically and artistically, but felt he was out of place. He joined the mass observation movement, an experimental observation anthropological movement, who was observing the way of life in the north of Britain. Mary Fedden, on the other hand, 5 years younger, studied art at the Slade School of Art under Polonin, who was a Russian with good connections with the French and Russian modernists. Both of them made a good team of landscape artists. However, Mary Fedden is much more known for her still lives. The Trevelyans married in 1951, participated in the Festival of Britain in the 50s and 51, and during the 50s traveled extensively across Europe. Before their arrival in Malta, Julian Trevelyan was the head of the etching department of the Royal College of Art, and Mary was the first female teacher of painting in the same college. And I think it is within this context that we should view the art of Julian Trevelyan and Mary Fedden, their ascendancy of an artistic career coming to fruition. Both Julian and Mary were recognized artists. The Binns invited them. Graham Binns, who had invited them to come to Malta, knew them. His intention was for them to depict the landscape of Malta. But more than that, he wanted Maltese artists to mingle with them, to get to know them. He was concerned that the landscape art in Malta was very, very much unsophisticated, conventional, traditional. And he wanted to do something to change that. In fact, in announcing their arrival in Malta, Binns had written this: "Painting and sculpture are handicapped in Malta by the fact that painters are scarcely able to see work by their contemporaries or keep in touch with other ideas. And for this reason, the visit by these two English painters is particularly welcome." Whilst in Malta, the Trevelyan stayed with the Binns in their house, in their villa in Rabat, but also spent a few days in their farmhouse in Shara Gozo. They also spent a few days of the 3 weeks they spent in Malta in an apartment in Siren Street, Senglea. During all this period, they were painting consistently. And I have managed to find at least two sketchbooks from that period by Mary Fedden. I hope to find more sketches from this period as time goes by. But before they left Malta, the Trevelyans gave a farewell party to the people that they had met on the island during their stay here. And amongst the people that were present for this party, apart from Graham and Julian Binns, who had invited them to Malta, there were Frank Portelli and Joseph Bolschwerer, two artists very much involved in the modern art movement in the period. Vera Greer, who was also in the cultural circle of the time. Dr. Later Judge and Mrs. Caruana Karen. Aldo, I am presuming he was Mikhailov Grimaud. Joe Cicluna, probably Il Marquise. And Sir Charles and Lady Lamb, amongst other guests. The paintings shown during the farewell party were said to be, and here I am quoting, Trevelyan's impressions of Malta and Gozo, which showed a complete fresh artistic approach to our landscape, and local scenes seen through virgin eyes. These landscapes were interpreted in an unorthodox fashion, simply and directly. The naive, primitive, and quasi-vernacular style should not, however, be interpreted as lacking in sophistication from an artistic point of view. Most of the surviving works by Trevelyan show landscape scenes of Gozo, identifiable with the inclusion of rubble walls, farmhouses, prickly pear trees, windmills, donkeys and carts, hilltop towns, and obviously churches. But apart from these particular Gozitan features, Trevelyan's works have three particular characteristics. Simple manner of execution and naive interpretation, making them easily recognizable as his. The composition is dominant by one particular feature. In this particular example, there is the donkey, which attracts your immediate attention. Here, it is the scapel, probably Mary Fedden and Julian. In this particular example, we have the cartwheel. And then you go and search for more information. And the third element, which is particular to Trevelyan's early works of Malta, is the limited color palette which he uses. They are virtually monochrome paintings. Blue, pink, blue, purple. So these are the three characteristics. But more important, Trevelyan's landscapes are not the pretty scenes of Gozo. He was not concerned with depicting any particular iconic location. Even when he included Citadel or the Ramla Bay in his paintings, they were simply part of the whole context, used to obtain the rustic, unsophisticated beauty and mood of the landscape. He was not concerned with painting a particular scene per se, but to capture the spirit of the place. He had, as one critic recently said, an innocence of eye that could discover enchantment in the most mundane scenes. This discerning attention to abstracting essential details was a skill which Trevelyan acquired from his involvement with mass observation, where they had to observe, not to interpret. And this is a dichotomy. Here he is doing partly the opposite. Yes, he was observing, but giving his own interpretation, with basic rawness and unconventionality, and without abiding slavishly to the original sketches or actual landscape. These gouaches or watercolors executed in Malta would serve not only for the execution into oil paintings when back in London, but even the production of ambitious Malta suites and etchings the following year. Here we can see a watercolor executed during his stay in Malta in 1958, which was then used as an etching part of the Malta suite, which you can see, the immediate opposite, the exact opposite, the reverse. The donkey is looking this way in the actual painting, whereas it's the reverse side on the other painting, the church on this side and the prickly pear tree, whereas it is on the other side at the other end. What is really, really very, very impressive is these deep bite impressions on the etching, which are virtually identical to what he actually painted in the watercolor. He was a master etcher. Soon after Trevelyan's departure from Malta, the Malta Society of Arts, Manufacture and Commerce organized its triennial art exhibition at Palazzo della Sal, which was opened on 22nd October 1958. The selection committee for this exhibition included Joseph Bolschwerer, Frank Portelli, and Graham Binns. And it was therefore not surprising that they would include a painting from the works of Julian and Mary Fedden. Trevelyan's painting was titled Gozo Sketch, a landscape depicting the Gozo cubic rural farmhouses with prickly pears and a farmer in the foreground and the citadel and Gosden hills in the background. The painting's naive style and sheer directness of the image must have been a shock to local viewers, being more attuned to the classical academic manner of landscape painting. Even Mary Fedden's work showed a modern interpretation of landscape with its lack of detail and direct depiction of the bare essentials in a primitivist style. The foreword to the exhibition catalogue, written by Graham Binns, delved on aspects of Malta's landscape and restricted opportunities afforded to Maltese painters, the lack of interaction with international artists, and the limited number of discerning patrons. He also insisted that the insular nature of Maltese painters needed to be challenged, and in an outright reference to Trevelyan and Fedden, states, "In this exhibition, for example, the look of the island comes out most strongly in drawings and sketches by people who are not Maltese, and who because of this, perhaps, see the landscape of the buildings with more interest and curiosity." Something curious is,
can you go back? What am I doing?
Something curious is that both these paintings were noted as being sketches, not paintings, when they were exhibited. The catalogue mentions them as sketches. Another interesting feature in some of the surviving paintings of Trevelyan from 1958 is the cubic and abstract qualities with which these works are imbued. In the works Landscape Cubes and Mediterranean Townscape, which we shall see just in a while, this feature of abstraction is particularly pronounced. This can possibly be ascribed to the artistic trends that were developing in Britain at the time, where the influence of the American abstract art was spreading particularly amongst the younger generation of artists. On the other hand, Malta's landscape with its cubic features of flat-roofed houses and rectangular terraced fields could have rendered any experimentation with abstraction all the more convenient. Notwithstanding these experimentations with abstractions before and after his Malta visit, Trevelyan cannot be considered to be an abstract artist. Indeed, he himself declared, and this shows that he was actually experimenting, "Not for me, the killing discipline of abstraction." Let's move on for a while to Mary Fedden. As I said, two sketchbooks from Mary Fedden's visit to Malta in 1958 have been discovered. Incidentally, the first sketchbook shows on the first page a scene of Mdina. From Misra Hissur, looking towards the street in front of us, with Palazzo Falzon and Carmelite Church Baroque Bell Tower visible. Palazzo Santa Sofia, where we are gathered today, is also seen in the distance with its characteristic medieval double serrated stringos detail, as are the open and closed balconies, archways, ferrobattuto fixtures, and other typical Maltese features. Fedden, in her first sketch, manages to capture the Maltese architectural identity with a few yet sure lines. Incidentally, I tried to find, to locate this roundel, and I could not find it in the place from where it is actually depicted. But as we go to St. Paul's Square, there's a roundel with the Madonna and Child. And even here, actually there's another one over there. This was typical of Fedden, that she included aspects and elements within her paintings, which did not actually relate to the scene she was depicting. So you can see a church from one village plus another thing from another village completely inserted into one painting. The sketchbooks contain a number of sketches which Fedden would use in her typical still life whenever she decided to include Malta's landscape in them. It is worth mentioning that although Fedden continued throughout her long painting career to specialize and is renowned for her still lifes, she would occasionally paint landscapes, but frequently the landscape would form the backdrop to her still life work. This characteristic of using landscape as the prop or accessory to her deeper interest in still life painting can be found even in her earlier works, immediately after the war. It is perhaps reminiscent of her earlier training under Vladimir Polonin, the Russian stage designer who taught theater design at the State School, with the still life replacing the actors and the chosen landscapes acting as the painted sets behind. These are two circa 1948 paintings of Trevelyan, the still life in front and the landscape behind to complete the picture. The sketch of Valletta from across the harbor captures the bare essentials of Valletta's fortifications, with the upper barracca and glimpses of Valletta's passenger lift linking the upper part of the city to the area of Customs House on the waterfront. It is amazing how in its simplicity Fedden managed to include all the details necessary to project what is essentially Valletta, the fortifications, its intricate architecture, and the emerging particularity of television aerials that had already started to sprout all over the island in the late 1950s. In a like manner, Fedden draws the fishing village of Marsashlok from the high grounds of Tassilj or the Limara, managing to include the harbor and its boats, the small village, and the houses surrounding the local church. And in the background, the nearby villages of Asha and Gudia and Palazzo Marnisi also seen. Here, Fedden seems to want to convey a sense of ghost-like laziness, inactivity. No man, woman, or animal are actually featured in this painting. But you can see the strong highlight of the shadowy areas. In addition to the painting, to painting the landscape scenes, Fedden would also take the opportunity to draw interior scenes, which particularly suited her style. Cacti and Table is a drawing dominated by the intricate and detailed design of the floor tiles, typically found in Maltese houses. The contrast between the smooth patterned tiles and the spiky and leafy plants could not have been more pronounced, but Fedden manages to integrate both these features without causing any imbalance in the composition or internal infighting as to what should take precedence. In this drawing, the eye moves between the plants and the floor tiles in an exercise of compare and contrast, the former showing their pointed spikes and the floor its smooth, cool finish. Fedden shows no hesitation in execution. Each line is surely and convincingly drawn. Characteristically, Fedden uses a quasi-aerial view of the tabletop and the floor tiling, but a frontal placement of the cacti, not concerned with the fact that by doing so, she will be losing the perspective. Indeed, it is because of this that she does it, an attribute that has become synonymous with most of Fedden's still life works throughout her career. This same sketch is reinterpreted in color, if she demonstrated steady hands and complete control in the pen sketch. The use of color brings out the best of Fedden, who creates a balanced composition notwithstanding the highly decorative and intricate design. Certainly, it has all the attributes which make it a good painting: balanced composition, delicate coloring, and refined skill in a master painterly execution. It is a still life painting which easily fitted within Fedden's style of painting, where she could show her bravura. The sketch painting is a precursor of what was to become Fedden's artistic hallmark: clear, simplistic, naive, colorful, decorative abstractions. Another example of a landscape which Fedden uses in her still life, Jan, is Grand Harbor with Valletta and Fort Sant'Angelo. The same lower barracca scene is eventually used in the sketch Chair and Valletta, also from 1958. Here, Fedden uses the landscape as the backdrop in a dentro-fuori composition depicting the interior of a room in their apartment in Siren Street, Senglia, showing a black chair, patterned tiles, and the wrought iron railing. Once again, Fedden finds her natural habitat in these type of paintings, still life with a landscape background. As a matter of interest, Fedden continues to use the chair on patterned tiles and with a landscape as a backdrop many years later, as in this 1981 watercolor, The Black Chair. Incidentally, this is not of Malta. It is within this context that Fedden's landscape sketches should be seen as an accessory to her still lifes. let's move now again to Julian Trevelyan. And a few months after the couple's return to London, Julian Trevelyan started to work on a number of etchings of Malta. In 1959, Trevelyan produced no less than 18 etchings, half of which with a Malta team, including six making up his first Malta suite. He must have been impressed by Malta. The Malta suite is the first suite he actually produced. He produced many other suites after the Malta suite, but the Malta suite is the first suite he produced. The Malta etchings have a typical inclusion of horse-drawn cart, flat-top hills, churches in the skyline, rubble walls, windmills, and the like. But the etchings cannot be identified with a particular location, and is possibly an invention of the artist grouping together the various characteristics of Malta's landscape. The Malta suite was produced in a technique called deep etching. They were exhibited at St. George's Gallery between September and October 1959, together with other drawings and sketches to make up these etchings. Carnival is this one over here, shows a typical Maltese village scene with churches and houses in the background and a statue carried on the shoulders of a number of bearers. The sky is lit by open fireworks and the statue is purposely void of any color to pronounce the brightness and thus its importance. This is a typical village feast celebration and the title can therefore be misleading, unless, of course, it was intended as such, for the paradoxes in celebration of religious feasts in Malta. What is certain is that Trevelyan was not in Malta at carnival time, but at the height of the summer festivities. The etching Gozo and Valletta, the etchings Gozo and Valletta, were perhaps Trevelyan's most successful in the open bite technique. This can be seen in the cloud-like blank white forms imprinted by the holes in the plates. These etchings were well received by collectors and even form part of important collections, including the Victoria and Albert Museum, amongst others. Neolithic temple, on the other hand, showed the sleeping lady of Hasaflieni on the lower left. Typically, Trevelyan did not change the image so that when the imprint of the etching is done, it shows the real face of the work. In actual fact, the face should be on this side, the face of the sleeping lady should be on this side, whereas he actually painted as he was seeing on the plate, and then when it's printed, it comes the reverse. This is shown in most of his etchings. Perhaps the importance of this work in Malta's art historical context is the projection of Malta's cultural heritage in works of art at a time when Malta was thriving for its independence and when the artists, authors, and historians were seeking to reinforce Malta's national identity. Malta's heritage as a symbol of our national identity was frequently used by Maltese artists during the 1960s. It is therefore being suggested that Trevelyan's input could have indeed influenced Malta's art in this period. One must observe that in the paintings and etchings executed by Trevelyan during the and after his first visit to Malta, he did not seek to depict any iconic building, but was more concerned with the vernacular architecture and its relationship with the landscape. In general, they are depicting an inherent tranquility of the island's terrain, verging on the static and with little movement. Very few people are included in the paintings, and where they are, they do not propose an image of dynamism, even if they are performing some form of activity. Another observation worth considering is the use of color in some of his paintings. Reference has already been made that some of his earlier gouaches were executed with a limited palette. However, one also notices the use of vibrant red color in a number of his paintings and prints. Why did Trevelyan use the red color so extensively in his 1958 paintings and 1959 prints? Using red to depict the sea and sky when the Mediterranean blue sea is so beautiful and characteristic of the place is an anathema. Was this used for aesthetic considerations in an exercise of color? Or can one read more into it? Was it the heat and possibly scorching sunshine and the dried out land that made the artist equate the situation to such a color? Perhaps part of the answer lies in what he had confided with Bortwierup, that the bright sunshine had firstly knocked out his sense of color, subsequently to discover a totally new range and combinations of color, depth, and intensities. Yet another, not dissimilar, explanation can be obtained from an extract in the brochure introducing Trevelyan's Malta Suite. The glaring relief, here I'm quoting, the glaring relief of the Mediterranean sun on the dusty Maltese rocks presented striking contrast to our silky atmosphere in England. Accordingly, the Malta Suite is composed in bright colors. The Malta Suite was a great success and was instantly sold out. It helped to enhance Trevelyan's reputation among patrons and artists. It also helped to promote Malta to other artists, writers and painters, who would eventually decide to settle in Malta, aided by the favorable tax concession that were afforded by the Maltese government in the 60s. Suffice to mention artists Victor Passmore and Sir Basil Spence, and authors Anthony Burgess, Desmond Morris, and Nicholas Montserrat. Let's turn now again to Fedin's work. Fedin's artistic hallmark has already been described as clear, simplistic, naive, colorful, decorative abstractions. But whereas her sketches and colorful sketch paintings can find these characteristics dominant in them, the paintings that she was producing and selling during this period show a rather different trait. They betray a sophisticated approach containing painterly skills, which is certainly evident in the paintings from the late 1950s and early 1960s. This contrast cannot be overlooked in view of the fact that Fedin's eventual success hinged on the simple rendition of decorative still life paintings, sources of which are already manifest in her Malta 1958 sketchbooks. So was this difference between her sketches and her final paintings due to the fact that she was not yet convinced that this was the style she wanted to adopt? Was she still under the influence of or overshadowed by her more illustrious husband? Were all these factors impinging in the development of her style? One of the few known exemplars of Fedin's 1958 works is that which had been exhibited at De La Salle. Looking at this painting, one immediately notices certain simplifications reminiscent of Trevelyan's style. Other paintings from this period include Imdina, which are here being shown in the first pen sketch, a colored sketch, and the eventual oil painting of the same landscape. One cannot escape commenting on the influence that Trevelyan still had on Fedin's style up to this period, particularly in the interpretation of the landscape. In the sketching of the buildings, one can see the linear quality which Trevelyan was so expert at. Even in the work Calypso, the distinction between Fedin and Trevelyan's work is not so obvious. And this leads to the next aspect, which needs further consideration. The use of the dark, sharp color, particularly the use of red in Fedin's paintings. Comment has already been made earlier concerning Trevelyan's use of reds in the interpretation of Malta's landscape. This has been attributed to the possible representation of the infernal heat that the couple experienced during their stay in Malta. Valletta Harbour, Malta, is a typical example which Fedin executed in 1962, 4 years after the first trip to Malta and 3 years after Trevelyan had published his first Malta Suite, which included such strongly colored etchings. The same type of strong palette in deep red can be seen in Flowers and Artichoke Flowers, both dated 1962, and which can be attributed to the influence of Trevelyan on Fedin. There is no hint of the delightful decorative elements which have been mentioned above, and which so characterized her later works. One must admit that seeing the other side of Fedin's painterly skills, which are sometimes wrongly considered to be absent from her colorful decorative still lifes. It is believed that Fedin was at the crossroads of her artistic independence. This is possibly a stage when Fedin is struggling to impose her own artistic will, but at the same time still under the greater influence of Julian Trevelyan. Fedden's natural inclination was to use softer and brighter colors, and indeed, she did so even in earlier years, immediately after her first visit to Malta. Whilst imposing a robust painterly skill, she was toing and froing, from wanting to develop her own independent style and unsure whether it is in the right direction or which direction to take. This may be considered either her indecisive period or possibly her reflective period, a period facing two opposing extremes between her simplified abstractions, natural inclination, and the harsher, stronger, and possibly radical interpretation. As Gooding observes, Trevelyan's influence on Fedden's artistic development was more in the confidence that he gave her rather than imposing his own style on her. In fact, these traits of Trevelyanistic influences were to be short-lived, and soon Fedden was to develop her own unique individual style. In a similar manner to the painting just shown, Flowers 1962 offers many identical features, although the title of the painting does not indicate any connections with Malta, although I believe this is a representation of Malta as well, with this wall over here and the bastions or fortifications over there and possibly a dome. It's very similar to the earlier painting we saw. It is certain that the influence of the painting is derived from Malta. The strong, deep red hue is not and cannot be considered as exclusively related to the Malta period, but these colors in Fedden's paintings have at times been referred to as Fedden's Gozo period red. In 1963, Trevelyan published his book Etching, Modern Methods of Intaglio Printmaking, and in the summer of that same year, suffered an unidentified viral infection of the brain which affected his speech. As a result of his illness, Julian had to resign from his teaching post at the Royal College of Art. It was during this year that Julian and Mary returned for their second visit to Malta. Although Trevelyan said his illness did not affect his capacity or desire to paint, he admitted that his trembling hand had made writing harder and line drawing wobbly. In 1966, he just produced three etchings. A painting from this period is Maltese Goat Herds, an oil painting from 1963 showing a female herd sitting near two of her goats with Ramla Bay in the background, and Madur in the background as well. This was the scene where the Binzes had their farmhouses in Shara Gozo, near the mythical Calypso Cave, overlooking the bay. Trevelyan, in this painting, probably executed in London, keeps everything simple and to the bare minimum, and starts to show a preference in the direction of flat colors, a style which would become more evident in later years. Trevelyan was also economical in the use of color, concentrating on a variety of grays and blue in the depiction of the landscape. Two other paintings from this period give a rather different interpretation from the one just described. Both are landscape scenes and are busier in their execution, with some form of activity in the foreground. Gozo Street shows again signs of nativity, reminiscent of his earlier 1958 works. Once again, Trevelyan economizes in the use of color. But here the execution of the paint is similar to his 1958 paintings, with the brush strokes visible. On the other hand, the other painting, simply called Gozo, whilst retaining the naive characteristics visible in most of Trevelyan's works, uses bold, flat colors and forms. In his simplistic way, he manages to project the quintessence of Gozo, with Tajordan Lighthouse and the Asri village and church in the background. This change of style can possibly be attributed to Trevelyan's initial physical disability, which limited his agility to paint. The surety of line seen in his earlier paintings now seems to be replaced by uneven gestures or marks, although this could likewise be Trevelyan's naive way of painting. Could this have possibly been the influence of Mary on Trevelyan? Or can this be attributed to a simple progression of styles? Whatever the reason, there is certainly a change in style. These are two different styles completely. Here he is more concerned with the detail, and although it's very simplistic, there it is much more ragged, much more naive, I would say. Another interesting development in the paintings from his second visit is the change of focus from one mainly set on the landscape and the vernacular buildings to paintings which now had people in the center of attention and at times performing some activity. Human activity continues to feature in his subsequent paintings and etchings, with the emphasis now shared between the landscape and the Maltese persona, denoting the social aspect of the land. Conceivably, Julian had started to understand and relate not only to the island itself, but to its people as well. It has already been emphasized that in the late 1950s and early 60s, proved for Fedden, to be a period when her art seems to be at the crossroad. But after Julian's illness and their visit to Malta in 1963 and her resigning from her teaching post a year later, it seems that Mary moves on to clearer direction. Her art takes on a more concrete and simplified form, something which continued to evolve consistently throughout the last five decades, constantly eliminating the non-essentials and insignificant to produce masterworks of art which can easily be recognized as Fedden's. It is interesting to note the number of landscape paintings, mainly of Gozo, that Fedden produced during 1963. Whilst in earlier years Fedden had used the vibrant red color, this time round she starts to use the calmer, warm colors, as may be seen in the two nearly identical paintings, Tomato, 1963, and Landscape of Gozo of the same year. Several other paintings with these warm tones of orange, brown, and pinks were executed. This does not mean that Fedden was exclusively using these colors, as can be seen from Windmill, Gozo, Malta, 1963, which is bathed in a light blue tone so typical of the Maltese summer sky devoid of any clouds. One can see that Fedden continues to employ her typical composition with the landscape background, a rubble wall on the lower left, and the country lane in the lower middle section to break the painting into sections. Two interesting paintings from this period are a depiction of a lady in a Maltese garden at night. This painting, as so many of Fedden's paintings, is reinterpreted in another version of the same scene with brownish monochrome effect. The second Malta Suite by Julian Trevelyan. The Malta Suite, the first Malta Suite, proved so popular that a group of Maltese businessmen commissioned a second series. Trevelyan worked on the second Malta Suite following his third visit to Malta in 1968. The suite consisted of six etchings and aquatints, printed at Studio Prints and published by Malta Industries Limited, in an edition of 50 plus a number of artist print proofs. Mary and Julian Trevelyan traveled to Malta for the occasion of the launch in April 1970. By this time, Trevelyan's reputation in Malta was established, having made many friends and acquired many admirers. The second Malta Suite shows an interesting development in the art of Trevelyan. While some of the prints retain the same structure, composition and technique used in his earlier Malta etchings, other prints show a marked simplicity of execution in a modern style, glimpses of which were already showing in 1963, as in his Malta Goat Herder. This particular feature is noticeable in the works entitled Sinking Nuns and Fishermen, and to a lesser extent, Calypso. This simplicity is reflected in the stylization and flatness of the color blocks used for the etching, whereas on the other three etchings in the suite, Valletta, Bonzo Bar and Stone Cutting, emphasis is more on the aquatint and cross-hatching of the plates, and the resultant effect on the printed work. The colors used are generally earth colors, orange, brown, ochre, and maroon, although in the case of Singing Nuns, the artist used vibrant cobalt blue for the sky as complementary to the burnt sienna and black. The earlier observations and comparison concerning the change in style and focus in Trevelyan's paintings apply equally to his graphic works. Whilst in the first suite the emphasis is on landscape and buildings, in the second suite people are included in a more pronounced manner. In the second Malta suite we can see the artist as a people observer, harking back to the days when he formed part of mass observation. The socio-cultural traditional elements of Maltese society are represented and infused within the typical Maltese landscape. Trevelyan struck another 5 or possibly 6 etchings with a Maltese subject matter during the 1970s, following his second Malta suite. By the end of 1970s, the Trevelyans had already visited Malta 5 times, spending most of their time, as evidenced by their sketchbooks and paintings in Gozo. Apart from their visit to launch Julian's second Malta suite in 1970, they visited again in 1976 and lastly in 1979. Julian continued to paint Malta even after his last visit. What is, however, immediately evident in the paintings from the mid-1970 onwards is that Trevelyan understood not only the landscape, but also the social character of Malta. Not just the topographical characteristics and features, which by now seems to be second nature, but also the socio-cultural dimension, which are infused in his works. Be they the salt pickers, the goat herder, the farmers, the swimmers, or the nuns within the Christian milieu of the island. Trevelyan must have continued to refer to his earlier sketches, as some paintings find their genesis in his first Malta trip way back in 1958. But they are now more mature in their characteristic simplicity and unsophisticated manner. This is the 1958 etching and another representation of it, oil on canvas, but using, you will see over here that this is the reverse of the Grand Harbor. He keeps here, he's referring to the etching and painting it as reproduced in the etching, obviously much more modern in execution now. In a similar direction, Mary Fedden continued throughout the 1970s to draw on the influence of her husband, but this time much more independent-minded, and one dares to say also influencing Julian in his own way. Like Julian, she would continue to refer back to her earlier sketches, reinterpreting and sometimes even repeating the same scene. In her paintings, the landscape continues to be an important subsidiary to the main subject matter of the painting, the still life or variations thereof, as in Maltese Lilies, 1970, or in Cats and Butterflies in Gozo, 1976. The repetition continues even in her more recent paintings in the last decade, as many as may be seen in the 3 interpretations of Gozo Cats, with the aqueduct and Tajordan lighthouse in the background. These were painted in 2002, 2003, and 2007. In a sense, both Trevelyan and Fedden, although still retaining their own particular features, moved and converged their individual art into an artistic movement absorbing mutual influences. By the time of his death, Trevelyan not only had a number of admirers and friends on the island, but had left his indelible mark on a number of artists who must have been influenced by his oeuvre. Richard Dingland can certainly be counted amongst those whose art might have been subconsciously influenced by Trevelyan, having openly admired his art since his youth days, and had in fact even first met the artist and his wife when they visited the island in 1963. England admired Trevelyan's reductive, this is I'm quoting Richard England, reductive approach designed to eliminate the non-essential and find the real essence of his subjects. In reference to Trevelyan's influence, England further exclaims, "If Trevelyan influenced me at all, it is in a subconscious manner. I think it was not the visual aspect of his work, which may have left some traces in my own personal expressions, but more so his philosophy of simplification and elimination." Similar yet earlier influences can be traced in the works of Maltese artists Joseph Bortschwerep and Marquis Joshi Kluna, both of whom adopted a naive style of painting to their works. These later two artists, who produced work contemporaneously with Trevelyan in the 1960s, show a similar disposition to simplicity and a primitive interpretation. There were also other Maltese artists whose work can be defined vaguely within the category of being in the manner of or similar to Trevelyan's work and style. Esprit Barthes with his rooftop interpretations, particularly when viewed with Trevelyan's abstract interpretations of the cubic forms of architecture within the Maltese landscape, is one such artist. But was Barthes influenced by Trevelyan? Was he in actual fact aware of Trevelyan's works? Or could the subject matter itself render such similarities? It is also possible to surmise that both Trevelyan and Barthes were artists who were being influenced from the same source of abstraction, idiom, then current in Britain, and to which even Barthes was exposed during his sojourn there in 1959. It is also possible to propose that in his incision works on clay, Antoine Camilleri might have been similarly influenced. But in as far as Camilleri and Barthes are concerned, one cannot authoritatively determine whether, if any, such influence were acquired directly through known works of Trevelyan, or indeed their exposure to British art in general, and whether British art in general had any lasting influence on them. And as far as Fedden's works are concerned, the nearest one comes to any influence, if at all, are the works of Kenneth Zamitabona, particularly when using the still life with a landscape background, with their playful approach and the intricate colorfulness of the paintings. Whether there is any actual or subconscious influence is yet to be explored. In more recent years, and particularly after Trevelyan's death, works by the artist relating to Malta, including his etchings, are much sought after, and when they appear on the market or at auctions, generally fetch above average prices. However, the influence and aura that had surrounded this artist in the 1960s in the world art market has subsided, whilst ironically that of his wife, Mary Fedden, who at the age of 95 is still actively painting, has risen to iconic status, with prices in the five-digit range now being the norm, notwithstanding her constant and abundant supply of works at auction houses and galleries. In concluding, I feel that Malta has been rather lucky with the regular visits of these two great artists, as Judge Bonello has called them, and with their generous depiction of Maltese landscape. Although we had had over the last 50 years or so a number of prominent artists visiting the island, even the eminent Victor Passmore, permanently residing in Malta for over 30 years, their way of interpreting Malta's landscape is a truly refreshing and unique experience. Thank you.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Malta Historical Society. This talk was delivered by Mr. Lawrence Pavia.